Hello, everybody. Just a quick note to say that this special episode of Craftcast was recorded just after the March quarterly communication of Grand Lodge. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this season finale.
Again. I can't believe we're here already.
Of season two of Craftcast.
Flown by.
The official podcast of the United Grand Lodge of England.
The world's premier Masonic podcast. I'm taking it.
You're going for it. What a bold claim.
Yeah, indeed.
I'm going for it.
Now, with the best of respect, I'm joined, as ever, by James.
Hello.
And Stephen.
Hi, guys.
And with the best of respect, chaps, I think we've heard enough from us. Yeah. So today we thought we would invite a very special guest host to join us for this very special season finale of Craftcast. And who else, who better to join us? Our first recurring guest, the most worshipful program master, Jonathan Spence.
Here we go.
We hope you enjoy it. Okay, so I think a good place to start here would be to reflect really on that sort of overarching vision about the new strategy and what it aims to achieve for Freemasonry. So can you sort of tell us, Jonathan, about the main pillars that underpin the strategy? I'm sure all of our listeners are aware of the temple, but could you sort of talk us through the three pillars that really underpin the strategy?
Yeah, of course. First thing to say is you've got to remember that the strategy is a medium-term strategy. So it's more of a distance race than a sprint. And it's one of the reasons why using the image of a Greek temple is probably quite appropriate. So the overarching ambition for the strategy is for us to be a thriving members organization, which people aspire to join and want to keep on joining and keep their membership. So that's what we're trying to achieve overall. So as you know, we're built on our values of integrity, friendship, respect, and service. But that's the base rock on which we build. Then you have to have the foundations, solid foundations. And that refers to the things that we do in Freemasons Hall to support the members' organization, with an emphasis on being a membership organization. So the most important aspect of what we do is in support of our members. And there's been a lot of work around that, and we'll come on to that in due course. Then we have the three pillars themselves supporting the overarching ambition. The first being thriving membership, which speaks for itself. We want to have a membership which is something people really enjoy that they have, that they are therefore willing to talk about it, that they get the most out of it, so they stay members, but also it enables them to talk to their friends, relatives, whatever it may be, for them also to join. And therefore we have a regular input, not only of new members, which is important, but also more importantly is maintaining the interest of our existing members, because the emphasis over recent years has probably been a bit too much on the new and young and not enough on the existing, the longer standing, and their important role in ensuring those that join really experience something that they want to keep going with. Then we have coherent organization, which is should be self-evident, but it means that all the provinces and districts work with Grand Lodge and Grand Chapter in order that we have consistent messages, that we're all doing the same thing in a similar way, subject to local variations we might get in Warwickshire, or dare I say it, Gibraltar, you know, allowing for little local quirks. And then, of course, we have community engagement. And the community engagement is something Freemasons have done for many, many years, but have probably underserved. There's probably been too much of an emphasis on the fundraising and the money. Hence the move to service rather than charity, because actually the most valuable thing to complement the money is the time, the skills, the effort, and making the difference. And the making the difference is not necessarily about just handing over money, but using your skills. Mm. And that if we can get all of that working cohesively, it strengthens the organization, strengthens the experience for the members. Mm. And delivers the vision for the longer term.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that struck me reading the information on the strategy was the piece about the membership challenge and the 17% on average resignation rate. I think it was just so important you made that point, actually, that yes, attracting new members is important, but actually engaging and keeping the existing membership, wanting to keep coming back into their lodge and their chapter, has to be kind of at the heart of what we're trying to achieve with the strategy.
I agree, and it's interesting that where lodges and chapters have adapted their more recent practices to involve more of their existing members in either running the lodge or the chapter or delivering the ceremonies for the candidates, they're feeling much more part of it rather than feeling slightly disengaged. And much as we all enjoy having a good lunch or dinner and the camaraderie that comes with it, being able to participate or watch something where more people are participating so it's more interesting, we are seeing that those lodges and chapters where that has happened, their members are feeling very much more engaged. And the other thing I would say, it's also about Grand Lodge and Grand Chapter communicating better with the underlying individual members. I mean, recently, Sean, as you know, I'm very keen on First Rising, but it being short, pithy, and interesting for the members. And you gave me a really interesting statistic about the shortish film that we have done on multiple candidate ceremonies. And earlier today you told me that over 90,000 of our members have now watched that.
Wow.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, 90,000 people have opened the email, and we know by looking at YouTube that over 23,000 people have watched the video, which is fantastic.
That's significant.
It's really, really
good. And the announcement in Grand Lodge has also been picked up by huge numbers.
Yeah.
So we're getting a lot better at talking to our members.
Yeah.
A slightly abstract comparison, but as I think you all know, I play chess. I'm a keen chess player. And I see often in local chess a big emphasis on youth chess, and they expand this area, and then those youth get to become in their 20s, 30s, and then they've got nothing to do, and so they come away from the game. And exactly this idea of if you don't maintain that engagement for the long-standing membership, then it's all well and good bringing in new and young members, but they've got nothing to follow into and to enjoy for you know many years to come.
Absolutely. And for the benefit of anyone who's listening, the program master taught me a new word in relation to that, which was laconic. So if anybody would like to know what the word laconic means, I would encourage you to look it up in a dictionary.
Oh, I thought you were going to give us the definition. Oh, okay.
he can't remember it.
Short and pithy. To the point. Succinct.
I think that the First Rising though has been incredibly effective in communicating directly with members and delivering sort of key bullet pointed almost updates and key pieces of information.
Well, you would say that because we're on it quite a lot.
Well, yes, but that's not. I think when you're waiting for stuff to kind of filter down through the ether, sometimes things get lost in translation. And actually, to have a unified message coming straight from the top, as it were, as we say, sort of delivering one key message and all talking from the same hymn sheet, I think it is making a difference to the way that the members interact with Grand Lodge and think about their membership in Grand Lodge for sure.
Yeah, we were at a meeting last night, weren't we, James? And the secretary rose for the first time. And, oh, you've all had communication from Grand Lodge. That was it. There's nothing to say that the secretary couldn't have stood up and said, I encourage you all to view, you know, the program master's comments from the last meeting of Grand Lodge, and also view the new video about multiple candidate ceremonies. Because there will be some people in that room, as we know looking at the statistics, half of the people in that room, who haven't opened that email. So there's definitely a benefit if we can get to those secretaries to get them to say actively as part of those
open
risings. Open the email. There's some really good stuff.
Yeah.
There we go.
Very passionate about that one.
Thank you. Well, did that come across?
The vested interest.
No, I am.
Did you tell the secretary that?
Funnily enough, when we came out of the meeting, I did say to him, how often, when you do your updates, for your risings, do you ever sort of encourage people to go? And he said, not really. Generally, people have seen it; they'll engage with it. I said, We've actually just released this video that you might want to encourage your members to go and view. And he said, oh. And I very distinctly got the impression he hadn't seen it himself. Yeah. But, you know.
The thing about the multiple candidate video, I've had one or two people comment about that to me. And I love it because I think it's this thing we talk about with the yes if part of the strategy, thinking differently. And yes, we can do that if. We're both in university scheme lodges. We see it all the time. It can work really well. It's very effective. It creates a bond between those two members. But again, to the point about the First Rising, to see that coming directly from Grand Lodge, it's sort of an endorsement to that extent to say, you guys, this is okay. This is something which we encourage you to do in the right situations.
Well, the other thing about it is often people say, we've never done that, which is not always the case. And we are reestablishing customs that have fallen into disuse. And because they've fallen into disuse and maybe the generation that did it is no longer around, it then becomes, we've never done that. We never want to do that. Which is one of the reasons why in the video I make the point that my lodge in Cambridgeshire has done its first multiple candidate ceremony in 50 years because they used to do it. And it's a 150-year-old lodge, so they've done it. They went through a phase when they didn't need to do it. They're now back in the phase where they want to do it and are doing it. Whereas my Oxfordshire Lodge has not ceased doing it since it was founded in 1819. And has done 11 or 12 candidates at once, very effectively. I mean, the biggest constraint, which doesn't come across from the film, is actually the lodge room.
Yeah.
There are some lodge rooms where it's very easy to do three or four, but you couldn't do any more.
Yeah.
But some lodge rooms, I'm thinking of the one in Gibraltar,
where
actually you do really well to get two done.
Two is a challenge,
at a time, but you could still do it well. And people just have to adapt for their particular circumstance.
I think the most I've done at once is five. You were both there as well when we did a raising for five people in 10K. In lodge room number
10. Oh, yes.
In
lodge room I was senior deacon.
He was senior deacon. In lodge room number 10. And that was probably about the right amount of people, five. You couldn't really get many more.
Oh, I reckon you could get more in, in number, in double 10. I think so.
Well, yes, as the person taking them around.
Yes,
as
if we make it bigger.
Taking them around, I reckon we could have added one more, maybe.
Maybe a push.
Past that might have been a push. But certainly, I think the lodge room is something to consider. But like you say, if it's worked enthusiastically and efficiently, it's certainly possible to achieve.
And remember, the point about the film was to make it those things that people are most concerned about, like, can the wardens leave their seats?
Yeah.
Can the master go down on the floor of the lodge without someone going in to take their place? How do the evolutions work? How do you get the candidates round in a sensible way? And that will help with that because remember, it's replicable for both the second and the third degrees.
Yeah.
So, Jonathan, could you talk to us about how UGLE is monitoring the success of the strategy and what the Strategy Oversight Group and the Strategy Working Party are doing to assist with its delivery?
Gosh, two very large questions there. To deal with the first one, we obviously, with the membership challenge being a number, we are monitoring the total numbers of membership of the United Grand Lodge of England at a UGLE level and by provinces, and provinces are also doing it down at lodge level. And one of the issues you have to get is how do you get the individual members and lodges, because that's where this is all going to be delivered. It's not going to be delivered by me or you or anyone else other than in individual lodges. It's getting them to clearly understand what the membership challenge, how do you relate it to your lodge? And I've heard the most successful provincial rulers have been those that have gone to their lodges, one of two techniques, said, at the end of this year, please ensure that you have at least one or two more members than you had at the start of the year. So that is a combination of reducing your resignations by keeping members engaged, as well as by bringing in new members. And the most successful provinces and we have now we've had an increase in the number of provinces that are growing. And bearing in mind, the first year was all about getting in place the building blocks yep. for subsequent delivery. That's pretty good going. Mm. There are some provinces who have not made an impact on their membership challenge yet, but there are quite a number that have improved their challenge. Mm-hmm. So clearly the members in the provinces are responding within their individual lodges. And if you can put it in terms of one or two more members at the end of the year, it's certainly deliverable. So if you've got a lodge with 32 members and they end up with 34 to 36 to 38 to 40. The other way I've heard it said, and there are a number of provincial rules done this, your lodge, which you say is thriving because it's the complacency factor, I've heard it's several of my colleagues come back and say, well, they don't think there's a problem because they've got X number of candidates. What they've ignored is they've had six resignations. Yep. And so to overcome the complacency, a number of provincial rulers are turning around and saying, you say you've got a thriving lodge. Well, 10 years ago, you had 60. You've now got 50 members. What are you doing to get back to 60? Or whatever the number may be. So we're monitoring, because unless you measure something, you won't know whether it's been successful. We've put the challenge to the provinces about improving their membership challenge, because it is not going to be possible for all the provinces, with all their different factors, to all grow. But they can do something about reducing the membership challenge. And if they do that in combination with those provinces which are growing, UJLE overall will achieve its membership mm-hmm. challenge of by year 3, 1% growth, by year 7, 2% growth, year on year. We're also, the rulers are engaging with individual lodges as well as with provincial rulers through the regional communication groups, and there are now regular meetings. And I think everyone realises we have to deliver this. And we are looking to the provincial rulers just as they're looking to their teams, just as they're looking to their lodges and members. And it's deliverable.
I think it's quite an achievable number, isn't it? 1% by year 3, 2% by year 7. We're not sat here saying we want to... I read it on the website, actually. We're not asking for 20% growth year over year. It's not achievable, but it's stemming the resignations, understanding the reasons that people disengage, and yes, increasing new people coming into the lodge as well, reflecting on where you were 10 years ago. And it's a very achievable amount of growth.
So you then asked, what did the Strategy Working Party do in the Strategy Oversight Group? Mm. So the Strategy Working Party, we meet roughly monthly. There are about 8 of us. And we're following through on making sure all the initiatives, and what we're trying to do is to make sure we don't do too many initiatives. So making sure the ones we've got out there, so members' pathway, really critical. Is that really doing what one wanted to do? Is it being implemented in the way and making sure we're doing that well? There are all sorts of other initiatives, and we're steadily working through. So one journey, one organisation is another one about making it clear the position of the Royal Arch and how important it is. So we're focusing on a very few things and trying to do it quite make sure they're being done well, yep. but make sure they're actually being delivered effectively and learning lessons. Because unless you try something, for example, the trip to Monmouth for the quarterly communication, there are a lot of people say, oh, it'll never work. Shouldn't do that if I were. But as the Grand Master himself said to me, when he was giving permission to go to Monmouth, well, if you don't try it, you won't know whether it will work, mm-hmm. will you?
And if you don't give your time and energy 100% to it, you won't. If you give 10% to it and it doesn't work, well, it could well be because you gave 10% to it rather than 100. So
yeah, I can't measure the relative effort levels. So that's what the Strategy Working Party is about, and then learning lessons. Yeah. So there will be a number of things that went really well with the QC out of London, but there will be a few things that we can learn from. Mm-hmm. And as I said last week at Grand Lodge, we will do it again. It's not feasible to do it every year, but we will be looking to do it either in 24 or 25. Mm. Sorry, not 24, 25, 25, 26.
Yep.
Because, you know, the previous time was 1937.
It's been a while.
It's been a little while.
Yes.
So, you know, and we'll do it somewhere other than Monmouth. So go to a different part of the country, give it a go. And one of the things I was quite pleased about was I don't think those of us that live within striking distance of Freemasons Hall appreciate the effort that the brethren that come from the more distant provinces, be it Warwickshire or Cheshire or Cumberland or Westmorland or Northumberland or Cornwall or West Wales or wherever, the effort they make, I wouldn't push that one too fast. The effort they make is considerable, and I was rather amused because I thought, you know, a very smooth journey down. So I did experience it. So I was at Monmouth Station, waiting to come home. My train was cancelled.
Yep.
The follow-up train had only 5 carriages rather than 10, standing room. And I thought, this is what the breadth... And so, therefore, we've all experienced the considerable efforts that people make to do it. So I was quite pleased about that, because we have to, in Grand Lodge, we've not only got to say this is what we're going to do, we've also got to be seen to do it, and we've got to do it well. Yeah. And I think the QC at Monmouth was well telegraphed that we were going to do it. We did it. I think we did it very well. And the members responded, just as they did last week. I think I will check the data, but I think last week's quarterly communication, where we encouraged Master Masons to come in their own right and they could put themselves into lunch. Okay, we could have possibly given a bit more notice, so it wasn't always those that might have wanted to come couldn't get the rail ticket sorted out in time. But we will be doing it again next year in March. So you can't say you don't know about it now, because I've just told you all.
Heads up.
But we will do it in plenty of time. But the numbers attending were far higher than we have had at a March quarterly communication for many years. And I was really encouraged by that. And I sat next to a member of the Light Blues Club from East Kent at lunch, and one from Hertfordshire. Because we need to be accessible. Mm-hmm. And I had a great chat with both of them. Turned out one was like my son, had a Spanish mother, was fluent in Spanish, so that was great. So we ended up chatting in Spanish briefly, as he realized what a terrible Spanish accent I had. But, you know, it's that sort of thing that we need to do and do well, so the members really understand that we're here for them, not the other way around.
Absolutely.
No questions really to follow up on that one.
If I may, could you define a distinction between the strategy oversight group and the strategy working party?
So the working party does the what I would call the detailed stuff. The oversight group, it consists of the board of general purposes and the rulers. Because between the rulers and the board, we have the responsibility for everything we're trying to achieve with the strategy. So the board deal with the finances, the board deal with the property of Grand Lodge, but they are not responsible for the strategy, qua the strategy. That is a ruler responsibility. But we have to work together in order to deliver it. So the direction of travel with the strategy working party, which was drawn from all sorts of people, but it's the rulers that are responsible for the strategy. But the board and the rulers are responsible for the implementation of the strategy.
So essentially a difference between monitoring and implementation.
Exactly. And the oversight group meets 3 times a year. And it coincides with we have rulers meetings where we talk about what we're up to, and the board meeting going on at the same time. We come together for lunch, and then we have the oversight, which is where we update them on where we've got to. The strategy working party updates on where we've got to, what's coming down the track, etc.
So considering what we're saying about the oversight group and looking back on the year so far, what do you feel are the most significant accomplishments that you've observed? Do you feel like these are sort of quantitative or more qualitative in terms of the the attitude amongst brethren, or is it purely numbers that you look at?
No, the qualitative is much more important. And one of the things I'm detecting is that there's a real buzz now, that in a way that I've been a Mason for nearly 42 years, a buzz that we're recapturing that was there, and just wandering around the building, and you know, when the bigger events came, when you go to a provincial meeting, when you go to a lodge meeting, that there is a feeling that the members realise we're serious and they want to be a part of it, and they want to work in their individual lodges and units. I think if you just focus on the quantitative, you miss the trick, because a membership organisation works when the members really enjoy it.
Yeah.
When it's something they look forward to, when it's something that they go back and say, well, I enjoyed that, I'll do it again. Mm. And that's what I'm trying to instill in the organisation. And you tell me. I mean, I pick up all sorts of things. And I did say the other day to somebody, is it my imagination or is there a real buzz about the place? Mm. And someone said, no, we're starting to feel that. And it's partly, I suspect, because in this strategy, they can clearly see the rulers, myself included, are really committed to making this happen. And we're really enthused to deliver it. And we need their help. And they realize they can make a difference. Yeah. They can do it. It's within their grasp.
From my perspective as a young Mason, I think the yes if attitude is an imperative part of that's really come through, particularly in the past year. And I mean, what I've been working on, which we've spoken about is the university society support network that I'm setting up. That wouldn't be possible realistically without that yes if attitude. Yeah. And that even personally has encouraged me to go, okay, yeah, I will submit a proposal and I will go and speak to someone who's maybe deemed very important in Freemasonry. I can say, well, could you take a minute to listen to my idea? And I've been encouraged to say, yeah, go away and work on that. Let's see if we can work on this and work on that. And what do you think of this? And it is that yes if attitude that's facilitated that. Yeah. So I certainly agree from my perspective.
I think I would agree with that. From my point of view, it feels like the strategy is one which is inviting the members to be an active participant in the strategy rather than telling them what to do. It's we almost saying, for this to work, we all have to be committed. We need you all to be involved in this for all of our benefits. And actually, there is a buzz around people wanting to make it work at every level that I've seen, which is different to perhaps other things that may have happened before. It feels much more like a bottom-up thing to a certain extent, where everybody has some involvement in making it work.
And the corollary to yes if is do try. And sometimes it will work really well. Sometimes it won't go quite as well as you hoped, but wait a few tweaks. And sometimes, well, it was an idea that didn't quite work, but be brave enough to do it.
And you'll still learn from it, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, talking about in the Grand Temple, it was amazing. I mean, seeing it that full, I've never seen it that full before. I mean, all right, I'm not, you know, I'm the only light blue here, but inexperienced Mason, but I've never seen it that full before. And I've never heard it that loud. And speaking to people who are down in the office, they could hear every syllable of the national anthem. Which it was the hairs standing up on the back of my neck. And I could see you, Jonathan, when you sat down, I could see you sort of looking up at the balconies, and it was sort of dawning on you that there's not a single seat that's empty in this room. And it just brings a whole new dime. And you could see, I mean, we were sort of 5 minutes before the procession was due in, and people were still sort of trying to get in. I thought, oh God, you know, they're going to have to slam the door shut at some point because, yeah, I've never seen it like that before.
The national anthem at a QC meeting is honestly just a mesmerising experience.
Imagine 1,600 people doing it in unison.
Yeah.
Oh, it was fantastic.
It's certainly one where I thought, that's come off. Mm. Now we must follow through consistently.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the lunch, we had the highest number attending the lunch, 750. We've never had that number attending a QC lunch. No. It was about 250 more than the norm.
Yeah.
And the great thing is the Connaught Rooms delivered on the quality of the food and on the service, and we pushed the start time back a little bit, but we still finished around 3 o'clock in order for those that have longer distances to get their trains. So, you know, and the word will get out from those that experienced it, and with luck, more will come. They won't all come all the time, but an individual can't because they're too busy or whatever it may be. But the word will get out, so we're going to be doing another push for Master Masons in September, and hopefully we'll see that. And I'm going to be radical in that there will be no top table at lunch. Mm. The rulers will sit with their provinces or their lodges, and the provincial grand masters sit with their provinces and their members. And, you know, after all, what is it about being a Freemason? We're all brothers.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And equals. Love that. Yeah.
So, Master Masons listening, you've got advance notice, September QC.
No excuses.
No excuses. Plenty of notice this
Lock
time.
Out the calendar.
Plenty of notice.
Absolutely. We've sort of reflected on a few areas, Jonathan, of the strategy, and I guess an important point maybe for us to reflect on now would be, where do you see opportunities for further growth or improvement going forward in the next year?
We have to deliver the current initiatives, and we have to deliver them well. So it's sort of more of the same, but we have to deliver them to a high standard. Mm. We have to ensure that more of our lodges and chapters take on board the need to ensure the quality of their ceremonies is of a high standard, that more of their members are involved in those ceremonies so they stay engaged, that when we're talking to potential new members, we don't give them an Admiralty Board interview panel of 15 people, but it's 3 or 4 maximum, as set out in the members' pathway.
Yep.
And that actually by doing it and doing it well, there was an interesting chat I had that those members that have come through unsupported know a lot more about Freemasonry than those that have come through a recommendation often.
Wow. That's interesting.
Because the recommendation is, I'm sure you'll enjoy it, which is a view. And there's a trust. So because somebody's recommended, if you have a trust in them, then you'll do it. And one of the issues I would like us to spend a bit more time thinking about, and this is something for the working party that looks at membership and communications, Sean, of which you happen to be a member.
Yeah.
But how do we capture that really good information that those that have come in unsupported through either digital marketing campaigns or through spotting websites or whatever it may be, they've put out more effort into learning what it is they're joining. And how do we sort of turn it by making that information readily available to those that have come in?
Absolutely.
And then there's a corollary as well, is that in a number of provinces, the number of recommended candidates is falling because our members may be thinking, well, we don't need to worry about that because they're all coming through the website, digital marketing campaign. And that is something we need to address and get across the message. No, it's not just through the unsupported candidates. We still need, vitally we need, recommended candidates, but they must be as well equipped with information as those that have found out more, because we are really geared up for those that come to us via websites or digital marketing campaigns, whatever it may be, who may have had no familial or friend connection with Freemasonry. And if we can get that right, and that will mean that the chances of those that have come in that have less good information or less information leaving because it's not quite for them will diminish, and it will strengthen those that are already in and have come that way. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things I would like post the PROS business meeting in April, I'd like the membership of Communications Working Party to give some thought to, as to, because it's a an area where we could do better.
Yeah,
absolutely right.
I'd almost be interested to see, you talk about the resignation statistics in the membership challenge. I wonder if there's any way of getting the data of those that came through a recommendation versus those that came through online, and actually see what the delta is.
And the work hasn't been done, but the anecdotes I've had from those provinces which had highly successful digital marketing campaigns or highly successful numbers of unsupported candidates who've not only come in but have stayed in.
Yes.
Versus the recommended candidates. And often it's because their proposer is no longer with us. Mm-hmm. And they've died or they're too infirm to attend their lodge. So they've either gone to honorary membership or they've resigned, which very sadly happens. That suddenly the connection isn't there and they just drift away. And that's something we can do something about.
Mm. I think to some extent you see that in university lodges. A lot of the members that join, a lot of the students stay because, like you say, they're unsponsored in that sense, they've or unsupported. They've come through a series of marketing campaigns or Freshers' Fair stalls or something, and they've seen it, they've read it, something that's captured their interest. They've gone and done their own research. They've then joined of their own
volition,
exactly. And then they stay because they enjoy the environment and what it brings, not because of one individual member.
Yeah.
That they tie their, almost the responsibility of their engagement to one member. And that's certainly something interesting that we see in university lodges, I think.
I proposed an old friend of mine into the lodge, my mother lodge. I think we initiated him about 6 months ago, and he did his second degree last week. Now, as we've discussed, I was in Hong Kong last week, so I couldn't attend the meeting. And he said, "Oh, I didn't know you weren't going. When I turned up and you weren't there, I was kind of felt really nervous." Mm. So, well, actually, it's probably a good thing that you have the experience of going to the lodge without me there as like a comfort blanket or a crutch, because it gets you talking to and familiar with the other members, so that if I'm not there or I disappear or whatever happens, actually you can continue to want to go to the lodge because you have that connection with other people. Whereas I think sometimes if you join, you know, if I joined because I was friends with you, Stephen, and then you had to move somewhere or something happened, I might have I'm not sure if I want to go back, actually.
And you see, and that's the key role for the longer standing members.
Yes.
And there are some lodges which are very hierarchical in the way that they sit at lunch or dinner.
Yeah.
I hate sitting on top table because I want to be in and talk to the members around me. And if the longer-standing members mix themselves up with the newer members and talk, so it builds I've had some fascinating conversations with longer-standing members. When I was younger, I was very lucky. I was in lodges where that did happen. It wasn't terribly hierarchical. And you then know there are a lot more people that you know rather than just your own friendship group. Mm-hmm. And you can talk to anyone.
Yeah.
And they are just as welcoming if they realise that, you know, that's expected of them.
Mm.
And getting into the habit of them all talking to each other is just that. If we can get that in all the lodges, it means that it doesn't matter the source of the candidate joining. It's the candidate's lodge and they feel it's part of their lodge.
And it encapsulates that pillar of a thriving membership.
Yeah, entirely.
Well, Jonathan, that's been absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us for a second time in this season finale of Craftcast Season 2.
Our first repeat guest, actually.
Our first repeat guest.
Yes.
Absolutely.
You mean I didn't muck it up too much last time?
You were so good we invited you back for a second time.
Yes, you do say the nicest things, James.
But no, thank you very much for taking the time.
No, it's a pleasure. Great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, brethren, it's always good to speak to Most Worshipful Brother Jonathan. The strategy is so important, I think, and it's great to hear that sort of anecdotal, as he said, qualitative evidence about the success it's going. And for me, the thing I take away from it that I said in the conversation was it's about every member being involved. It's not
absolutely
just a top-down dictate. It's about us all taking responsibility for it.
Well, I very much enjoyed having a conversation with the man leading the strategy. And yeah, who, as you said right at the beginning, who better to chat about this thing that's so imperative to our immediate future in Freemasonry.
And with that, I think the time has come to say thank you for everybody who's listened to this second season of Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast, the official podcast of the United Grand Lodge of England. You've heard it from the man himself, the program master. If you're a Freemason out there, embrace the strategy, read it, research it, see what you can do to help deliver the strategy. And if you're not a Freemason, what are you waiting for?
Yes, if.
There's never been a better time.
There's never been a better time to become a Freemason. So head over to the UGLE website, becoming a Freemason. You can find it at the top of the page. Fill out the form. And we look forward to seeing you in a lodge very soon.
And indeed, for season 3.
Indeed.
We'll see you in the hopefully not too distant future.
Indeed.
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 Goodbye for now, brethren.
Goodbye.
Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast. The podcast is hosted by Sean Butler, Stephen Watton, and James Dalton. The producer is Marta Zandri. And the podcast is edited by Trisonic.